The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of Reality Realty are not necessarily the views or opinions of Northumberland 89.7 FM. The information given is designed to be informative and helpful. You should always consult a professional when buying or selling your home. Hello and welcome Northumberland County to Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your real estate talk show where we talk about, and we interview guests on all things real estate with a direct focus on Northumberland County and the communities within it. I'm Dale Bryant and I'm a real estate broker, and my co-host is Dave Smith, certified home inspector. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Dale Bryant. It's good to see you. I don't see you much except for in this room for our short hour together.
That's not totally accurate.
I haven't seen you. Not in a little while.
I think
there is only now, Dale. That's the world okay. I live in just now.
All right. Well,
today you seem disappointed somehow.
I'm thinking back, I guess for the past 3 weeks, yep. This is the only place we've seen each other,
except for the incredible hours of research we do for the program.
Yeah, and hopefully that's appreciated. And speaking of the program, today's show will be looking at some frequently asked real estate questions and some common real estate misconceptions. And we will hopefully be debunking those misconceptions. Dave will also cover how to survive your home inspection. We'll look at Snapshot, which is a snapshot of today's residential real estate market in Northumberland County. And I've made a little twist on that too today. You'll see when that time comes. We also have points to ponder. So, Dave, how about how to survive your home inspection?
Well, how to survive your home inspection, as you well know, Dale, I've been every week pulling from my list of the most common items that can be found during my inspections, and many of them are minor or even trivial, but in my experience, as they start adding up, during an inspection, a buyer can start feeling overwhelmed if there's a lot there and maybe even concerned about buying your house. So what we're trying to do here is make a list for you to eliminate. And even if you're not selling your house, this is a great opportunity of things you may not have thought about, things you can do in your home. Too often, Dale, we'll see and you see it where you'll have sellers where they'll go around and they'll fix their house up for an open house or for pictures or for viewings and say, geez, I like the house so much now, I don't even want to sell it. So this is an opportunity to look at those things.
Yeah.
Okay, so the more items you can reduce that I've given you, the better. So this is this week's tips. I put three in here because they're all around the same idea. So touch up exterior paint. One of the most common inspection items of concern is overflaking paint on exterior wood. Most homeowners can touch up the paint without calling in a professional or a professional painter. But if there is widespread decay, call in a handyman or a painter, because again, if it's more than you can handle and speed is the key and time is short, then get in a professional to do it for you, and they will do an extraordinary job as a rule.
And Dave, that's not for aesthetic value as a home inspector. That's for protecting the wood underneath the paint, isn't it?
Yeah, we're not going to report on colors. We're not going to report on whether or not it's the proper sheen for the application. What we will report on is that once that paint film is cracked, the caulking is cracked, it's no longer doing what it's supposed to be doing, which is protecting the window, protecting it from moisture. So we're going to report on that every time.
Not like you don't have an opinion on proper color, though.
I have an opinion on everything, Dale. Get your windows to open. This is a big one. Test all your windows. Make sure they all open and lock properly. Repair any broken locks. Remove any excess paint or varnish. And if you've caulked them or they've been caulked at one point, take the caulking out and adjust the windows so they easily do what they're supposed to do. Most homes that have wood windows will have some that are inoperable. This is an easy thing to fix, and it's a particular frustration to prospective buyers, and it can be certainly to the home inspector as well. Again, we talked last week about getting things done quickly. Well, if I have to struggle with a window that won't open for 5 minutes to get it to work, and you multiply that by 40 windows, it certainly can extend the time. Here's a hint for you. Test all your doors too, and adjust the ones that don't latch, close, or they stick. Remember, if a door binds, that is an indication to a home inspector that something has changed in the home, something has shifted. That door didn't bind at one time, and now something shifted. So just a sticking door can lead a home inspector to look for deeper issues, and you probably would like to avoid that if you could. On the outside, trim the shrubs and tree limbs. Most homeowners fail to maintain their shrubs, vines, or hedges. Overgrown bushes and overhanging tree limbs damage a home's exterior, the shingles, the eaves trough, the walls. A good rule of thumb is to trim shrubs, hedges, and vines to within 16 inches of the building. Tree limbs should be cut back to within 6 feet of the structure. Again, call a pro if you don't have the proper equipment or it's unsafe to reach a tree limb. Trees and shrubs too close to a building can cause moisture damage to the exterior of the home. And this is what I'll see quite commonly. Overhanging trees, specifically pine and evergreen trees, they'll leave that when the moisture gets on there from dew in the morning or rain, and that overhanging limb will allow that to stay wet, stay moist, and then you'll get fungal growth or mold growth on the exterior of the building. Now you're talking about whether or not the roof needs to be repaired or there could be underlying issues. So one thing leads to another. The other thing that a lot of people don't think about is trees and shrubs that are too close to the building can create a highway for critters. And I often see bird's nests neatly tucked underneath decking or on top of light fixtures. Bird's nests lead to lice and insects. Bird's nests also lead to raccoons and squirrels going after the eggs. So you really get that circle of life happening in your home. And if you leave a tree branch overhanging the building, then it makes a good pathway for the squirrels, the raccoons, and other critters to get onto your roof. So get rid of those types of landscaping issues. So if you do that, that will be how to survive your home inspection this week.
Thanks, Dave. Let's take a look at a snapshot of today's residential real estate market here in Northumberland County. Dave, I'm going to add a twist this week to that. We'll go through our regular all of Northumberland County stats, and then I'd like to break it up, and I'd like to compare Cobourg versus Port Hope.
Have you consulted admin on this? Did you run this by the executive board?
Or? No, the phones will be ringing soon. Anyways, so I'm going to look at it. Cobourg versus Port Hope Ward 1. I want to take two urban areas.
You're going to bring in the Ward 1, Ward 2 thing.
Just
go there.
Compare urban with urban area.
All right.
Anyways, over the entire Northumberland County, the listings that have sold over the past month, we've had 102 listings sell over the past month. And for sale, we presently have an inventory of 441 residential listings for sale on our local real estate board. If we take a look at average listing prices and average selling prices over the past year in Northumberland County, we can see that the average listing price is approximately $307,000, and those homes are selling for approximately $297,000. So people are still receiving approximately 97% of their asking price in 73 days. And the absorption rate today for all of Northumberland County is at 23%. It is still a seller's market. So now if I take those same things, Dave, because you know what, there's a lot of talk at times about Cobourg versus Port Hope, and do homes sell faster or for a lot more money in one community over the other. So I thought I would just take a look. Now, keep in mind, according to in 2011, the Cobourg population was 18,519 with 8,541 private homes. Now, if we compare that to Port Hope, and now I didn't have a chance to break it down into Port Hope Ward 1 and 2, but all of Port Hope in 2011, they were over 2,000 people less in population, and nearly 2,000 homes less. So we're talking about a smaller community because that's Port Hope as a whole. That's Port Hope, the municipality, with Ward 1 and 2. And I'm really only comparing the two urban centers. So that in mind, the listings that sold over the past month in Cobourg are 45. In Port Hope, 23. So there's fewer listings that sold over the past month. Now, how many are for sale today? Port Hope presently has 135 residential listings versus 70 residential listings in Cobourg. So let's take a look at the listing price, the asking price, and the selling price in both communities. So Cobourg, their average listing price, Dave, if I could just get that, is 200.
This stuff should be just coming right off the top of your head, Dave.
You know, it's
you
not,
shouldn't need prompting.
It's not stuff I memorize. Some of it. So anyways, $297,000 is the average asking price in Cobourg, and they're receiving on average $288,000. So they're receiving slightly less. Well, anyways, we'll look at the percentages in a minute. And for Port Hope, the average asking price, $286,000 versus the $297,000 in Cobourg. And they're receiving, on average, $278,000 versus the $288,000 in Cobourg. Both communities are receiving 97% of their asking price. So they're both doing just as well percentage-wise. There's a small difference in the actual sale price. But
I'm interested by that difference in the sale price. Just trying to figure it out in my mind. I mean, there's always a glow, I think, from the GTA as far as pricing, like as you work your way, Ajax, mm-hmm. Whitby, Bowmanville, Port Hope, Cobourg, where the ring sort of goes out based on the proximity to Toronto, where in the case of Cobourg here, and congrats to Cobourg as a whole, but they've actually jumped over top of Port Hope and actually have a higher price for the homes. Do you think that's because of the lake? Do you think that's because of the progressiveness of the town?
I think there's a number of factors going on here, Dave. I mean, like I said at the beginning, Cobourg's a bigger community. Mm-hmm. Cobourg, the hospital's in Cobourg.
Yeah.
The mall is in Cobourg. Yeah. There's quite an impressive marina, boardwalk, and beach area in Cobourg. So there's a number of factors, I think, a number of other services and retail outlets that exist here that make living in Cobourg very attractive. Now, if I want to go out to eat, I don't know. I have a few more favorite spots to eat in Port Hope than I do Cobourg.
Yeah, and you know, you've got the factor of you do have some larger, small communities in close proximity that may be using Cobourg as a hub as well. Like mm-hmm. the place to go to if they want to go shopping, the yeah. smaller communities. Yeah.
So that draws. That draws.
Port Hope, they may be going to Oshawa rather than necessarily going east.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Anyways, market time. The average market time in Cobourg is 58 days versus 64 days in Port Hope. I mean, there is a difference. It's only a 6-day difference. But both communities are at a 33% absorption rate, so they're the same. Anyways, a little twist on our snapshot, and if you're thinking of buying or selling a home, you'll want this sort of information specific to the type of home, the area, the price band you're looking at. So talk to your realtor to understand the market information most relevant to you. And these statistics and the information required to calculate the absorption rate come to us from the Northumberland Hills Association of Realtors. If we take a look at the mortgage rates today, the 5-year fixed is still at, the best 5-year fix is still at 2.454 rather. And if you're looking for an interest rate of 1.9%, you would be wanting to see if you qualify for the best 5-year variable. And these mortgage rates come to us from mortgage broker Carol Ann Bryant here on Elgin Street in Cobourg. And she is with the Mortgage Wellness Group. So today, Reality Realty's points to ponder. Dave, I was reading an article by Mark Weisletter. He's a partner, an author, a speaker of the law firm realestatelawyers.ca. He's also a contributor to the REM magazine, which is the real estate magazine for real estate professionals. And I also have a book of his. It's called Put the Pen Down. It's What Buyers and Sellers Need to Know Before Signing the Dotted Line. Interesting articles he writes. This particular article, it was titled, What's Staying Behind? The Chattels, Fixtures, and Rental Items. And so he lumped it basically into five things to remember. The first thing he put down here, Dave, is be clear about what stays and what goes. And that is such a key for the entire agreement of purchase and sale. There needs to be clarity there. People need to know exactly what's going on. And so he writes, be clear about everything that is to remain on the property after closing, including mirrors, built-in appliances, television brackets, and closet organizers. If a seller wants the dining room chandelier, say so, but also require that the seller to replace it with another fixture so the buyer doesn't enter a dark room on the night of closing. You would think a built-in appliance would just stay. It's a fixture. It's fastened. But strange things happen when people are involved. So be clear that that built-in appliance needs to stay. The second thing he writes, find out the details of any rental contracts. Now, this is a real key point, and too often we don't look into it enough. He writes, make sure that as a listing agent, you find out the details of any rental contract to be assumed by the buyer and disclose them, especially if there's large cancellation penalties or if the buyer must continue with, for example, any home monitoring obligations. A good place to check is the gas bill, which typically includes rental charges that could include not only the hot water tank, but also furnaces or air conditioners or the entire HVAC system. If you're acting for a buyer, it's also important to ask for these details in advance so the buyer is not surprised after closing. And Mark writes that he has seen buyers have to pay thousands to cancel a hot water tank rental when they wanted to switch to a tankless water solution. He also has seen sellers have to buy out an entire contract when they forget to include a rental item in the contract.
So can I just throw something in here? First of all,
sure.
You're listening to Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7, Dave Smith and Dale Bryant. But talking about knowing what's included when you purchase a home, those two last comments you made about a buyer having to pay thousands to cancel a hot water tank rental, and then you've seen sellers have to buy out the entire contract. So that seems to be a contradiction in terms. Is this just because the buyer or the seller on the other side of the equation pushed it, I guess? Because that seems to be opposite sides of the equation.
Yeah, and it totally is. So in the first example he gives where he's seen a buyer have to pay thousands of dollars to end a contract. So they've agreed in the agreement of purchase and sale to take over any rental obligations right. from the previous owner. And then they get in there and they say, hey, maybe we want one of those waterless heater systems.
Right.
And then they start to read or maybe they don't read the fine print. Maybe right. it's the company that provides this rental and they're told of the fine print, and they find out that it's thousands of dollars to end that contract.
It's a due diligence thing is what it
is. Absolutely. And then on the other hand, if the seller didn't include the fact that there is a rental component in this transaction, and all of a sudden you have a buyer who finds themselves in a position with a rental item that they didn't suspect, I would imagine that Mark's referring to the fact that this may have went to court and the seller, because they didn't fully disclose everything, was obligated to foot the bill. Yeah. So there's such a thing as a holdback in a real estate transaction. So Mark has point number three, holding back money when something is broken or missing. So he says a buyer has no automatic right to hold back money on closing if they find something broken or missing during their final visit to the property. My advice is to quickly obtain an estimate to fix the problem, take a picture and send it to your agent or lawyer. In Mark's experience, lawyers are able to settle these issues even on the day to close when proper estimate is provided. So a holdback's a neat thing, and I always recommend to my buyers to have a couple, you could call it a visit, you could call it an inspection, it doesn't matter what you call it, it's the same thing. Have a couple visits. One, you might want to go a few weeks before closing and just make a decision on paint chip colors or bring a tape measure and figure out what furniture is fitting where. But I would save that last visit to the day before, 2 days before closing. Walk through the house. Find out if there's something wrong that didn't exist when you bought the house. Find out if there's a flood in the basement. Find out if maybe the refrigerator wasn't included. And so you see these two big gouges right across the bamboo floor from where the refrigerator used to be right to the front door because maybe they dragged it out. I mean, these are expenses. This is damage that you didn't purchase. So if you notify, if you have that visit just before close, you notify your lawyer, they'll work out a holdback, and they'll hold back some of the money from the seller on the day of close until that stuff gets repaired. And then
theoretically, the holdback would be somewhere in the same number as what it would cost.
Cost. That's right. Why he's suggesting to get a quote. Anyways, the last thing here. Oh, two more things, and we'll just brush on it briefly. Small claims court. He says small claims court is not a good answer. The people who actually win are the lawyers and the paralegals who represent the clients. And then he just further...
Oh, you might get a call about that one.
But, get a call. Well, I mean, this is written by a lawyer, right?
Yeah.
And that's why he's saying take care of it ahead of time. And the last thing here, he says, he writes out a helpful clause. And basically in this clause, he's just trying to detail every possible thing that should stay, that is either connected by screw, by ductwork, by wiring, and he just spells out each and every item clearly.
All right, you've been listening to Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7. Join us after the short break, and we'll continue looking at some frequently asked real estate questions as well as solving some common real estate myths. So please stay with us.
I'm Chef Michael.
And I'm Chef Michelle.
Consider yourself a foodie.
Enjoy watching those cooking shows.
Tune in to Chef's Corner Thursdays from 10 to 11 a.m.
for a special guest and our skill tasting question.
We'll keep you up to date with food-related events in Northumberland.
And Chef's Corner is also proudly sponsored by the Coburg Farmers Market. Open Saturday from 7 to 1 p.m. Farm to fork, eat fresh.
All on Chef's Corner.
89.7. Truly local radio.
For over 35 years, Northumberland Security Incorporated has been providing everything necessary for physical and electronic security. From locks, alarms, safes, access control to surveillance systems, and handicapped door operators. We are virtually a one-stop personal and property security center, operating from Pickering to Peterborough to Picton and everywhere in between. Visit us at 22 King Street West in Coburg, online at northumberlandsecurity.com, or call 905-372-8951, the professional security team.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
Truly local radio for Northumberland County has a new home. Welcome to the new Northumberland 89.7.
Welcome back. This is Dave Smith and Dale Bryan on Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7's local real estate talk. So let's take a look at some frequently asked real estate questions. And I just happen to have a realtor broker in the room with me, Mr. Dale Bryant. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show, Dale. Okay, so you're selling your home, and you receive an offer conditional on the buyer selling their own home. Should I, as the seller, accept such a condition?
Well, Dave, that's an interesting question, and those conditions are referred in real estate as an SBP, meaning sale of buyer property, or an SPP, sale of purchaser property, and that condition should include the address of the home that buyer needs to sell. And so basically that buyer needs to get the finances from the sale of their own home to be able to purchase yours. And you're going to want to know a few things. You're going to want to know the address of the home. You're going to want to see, is that home actually sellable? Do they have it on the market already? Or do they have intentions of having it on the market in the next 2-3 days? What is it priced at? Do we think that's a realistic sale asking price? Are they actually going to sell it? Are we going to enter into this agreement with this sale of buyer property condition? And really, they're priced so far out that there's just no chance of it selling. I mean, that could happen,
well,
too.
This is so valid, because I bet you in almost every home that I've sold, I've had this condition in there, and I've never ever thought of going beyond that first layer as a seller. I've just accepted it, but I've never thought of, was it overpriced? I've never thought of the address of the home. Never occurred to me that they may have more than one. This is a very valid point. I think everybody should make a star beside that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this condition should also always be followed up with an escape clause. So first of all, you have a condition that the buyer of your home needs to sell their property. Then that should be followed up with an escape clause saying that you, the seller, Dave, you can continue to have your home up for sale. And if you come into an agreement with another buyer, then the first buyer will receive a notice to fulfill their conditions.
That's so commonly known as bumping, right?
Yeah, could call it. It's like bumping, but so typically 24 hours is a very common amount of time that you would give that first buyer a chance to either remove their conditions,
right,
or fulfill them, or waive them, somehow remove them, or just be released from the deal.
Puts them on the clock, basically.
It does. If a second offer comes in and it's a firm offer that the seller is accepting, in this case that you're accepting, you also need to make sure in that second offer the condition exists that this second offer is conditional on you being released from a previous agreement of purchase and sale. So you can't sell your property to two people.
Well, I would like that, though. Think of the money you could make.
And move far away fast. Yeah, I don't think that works, Dave. But those are some of the technicalities around that condition. Now, the other thing is, should you accept that condition or not? Well, if you have a home and it's a one-off, there's very little competition with that kind of home in that price band, you might say, yes, I'll accept that condition that you need to sell your home. Because if there's another buyer that comes by and they're looking in my price band, in this price band for a home like this, I may be the only option. So they will possibly put in an offer knowing that a previous offer has basically a first right of refusal. Now, if you're living in a subdivision and there's three other homes in the basically the same price, same type of homes, you might not want to accept that offer with that with the condition of them selling their home, because future buyers, if they're so similar, why would they bother taking a chance that they don't get the home after an effort to purchase it? Because the purchaser number one firms up. I mean, chances are, if there's more competition out there, they're just going to move a path of least resistance, right?
Right. That makes sense.
So you need to look at the inventory, and that's why it's important you need to look at the inventory that they'll be competing with. You need to look at the inventory that you're competing with and wonder, is there something special about your home that'll keep people wanting to put an offer in on your home?
Okay, so here's another one for you. You've been looking for the right home to purchase, and finally you find it out there, but there are going to be competing offers. And this was a common thread through Northumberland County this year, maybe a historic theme this year, this spring and into summer. If you're concerned with not overspending, you shouldn't get involved in competing offers. What do you think about that? Like, is that something that you're afraid of getting on that slippery slope?
Well, to me, Dave, I would say that the way that's phrased, that's a misconception. If you're concerned with not overspending, you shouldn't get involved in competing offers. I would say that's not accurate. Yes, the property could sell for more than it would have if there hadn't have been competing offers. It's possible. And it's also possible that the home will sell for exactly what it would have sold for with one offer, but it'll get there without the initial low offer and then a counter offer followed by another counter offer. It might just get to the price it would have sold at immediately.
Right.
And so that's why I say...
Because everybody's heightened. Everybody's...
Yes.
Right.
Now saying that, people can go crazy in a competing offer scenario, and people can overbid and bid higher. But why I say it's a misconception is because it's not the fact that there'll be competing offers that make you overspend, because you're in full control of what you put down on that agreement of purchase and sale. You're in full control of the dollar value put there. And I recommend to my buyers, make a sensible offer. Just make that offer at a sensible price. You want to make an offer so you won't be sorry if your offer doesn't get picked, that you didn't make a strong enough offer. So imagine if you offered a certain amount, Dave, you didn't get picked, your offer didn't get picked, but you find out that the offer that did get picked was only $2,000 or say $1,000 more. Will you be sorry you didn't go, say, $2,000 more, and maybe your offer would have been picked? So you need to step up to the plate and go at a point that you won't be sorry you don't get the house. But at the same time, you want to make an offer so you also won't be sorry if your offer does get picked and you do end up purchasing the house, because you don't want to be regretful saying, I paid too much. So I say to the people I'm working with, don't be afraid that it's a competing offer situation. Make a sensible offer. Make an offer that you're comfortable with. You won't be sorry either way. And so there, you don't have to overspend just because you're competing.
Well, yeah, and you look at $1,000, say, prorated over a 25-year mortgage, you're looking at two cups of coffee a month, right? But on the other hand, what I've often been asked, and what I've often asked myself when I found myself in these situations, or we've discussed amongst ourselves, my wife and I, is, would you walk away from this house if you had to spend another $2,000 or $5,000 or $10,000? If the answer is yes, then that's where you get your comfort level. There is a limit. There should be a limit.
There should, yeah.
And if you were quite often at that limit and that extra $5,000 or $10,000 or $5,000 or $2,000 is too much, and you knew your limit was where you are, or you're even over your limit by $2,000, there may be a time to walk away.
Oh, there absolutely is a time to walk away.
Especially if you're buying it for the granite countertops, and the other house that you like doesn't have it. Well, if the granite countertops are only going to cost $5,000 to put in, you're spending $10,000 more. You know, sometimes the emotion just gets a hold of you.
Yeah, and if you don't put in the offer, you don't have a chance to buy the home.
Well, and the other thing on the competing offer thing is, the competing offer, you may only know the first blush. You may only know that they came in at this price or they came in at that price, or you assume. But you don't know what other conditions are there. Do they have to sell their home? Mm-hmm. Well, again, you're going all the way down that tree of knowledge that you may not have. So it isn't always just about the price. So let's talk a little bit about that. The highest priced offer isn't always the offer the seller takes. Can you give us a little bit, maybe fill that in a little bit? What does that mean, really? Why wouldn't they take the highest offer?
Yeah, well, you know what? To say price isn't important would be inaccurate, because basically purchase price is typically the first thing that the sellers are looking at. It's likely the first thing that the realtor's looking at as well. But there's other items that are very important in an offer, such as closing date. I mean, maybe these people just want your home way too soon, and you're just not going to be able to accommodate that. Or you have needs to move much sooner, and they're proposing a closing date that's much later, and it's just not going to work. There's also conditions that can be in an offer. I mean, if you have a no financing condition, or you have a no inspection condition, or a no sale of buyer's property.
Why did you even bring that up?
Okay, so as a realtor, yeah. I would never suggest to anybody to not have a home inspection. Right. Saying that, if we think of ourselves as a seller, and if we're sitting in a century home today, and every home, as you well know, Dave, has a list of items on a home inspection report. All our homes have items that could be attended to. When you're living in a century home, you're living in a home that's been there for 100 years or more.
You are sharp. You are a sharp cookie.
I mean, the list is likely bigger. So I'm sitting in a century home. I'm selling it. And I see an offer come in without a condition of a home inspection. I'm sort of saying, wow, I don't have to sweat as much now if everything else on this offer is palatable.
Well, I'm not going to let you wiggle off the hook there, and that's what I think you're trying to do. I think before this show is out, you and I are going to have it out over the whole home inspection thing. So let's move on. What about the size of their deposit? I understand that could sway some sellers as well.
Yeah, that could sway sellers. Now, there is no industry standard on deposit size. Saying that, I likely see in Northumberland County, I think our deposit amounts are very low here. I likely see $1,000 more than I see any other number. When you think about a transaction, and we were looking at it earlier on in Snapshot, a transaction that's in around the $300,000 mark and a deposit of $1,000, it's not much. But
now, this is just for clarification. Yeah. This is a refundable deposit if the transaction doesn't go through, correct?
If it doesn't go through for contractual reasons. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you just
not just I changed my mind.
Yeah, if you don't just disappear suddenly. Right. But anyways, the lack of finance, the deposit, you sort of think about that in relation also to, is there a financing clause, you know, some other aspects of the offer? Because if you have a very, say you have a $1,000 deposit.
I have a $1,000 deposit.
Okay. And and you also have a financing clause in there. Or no, let's say you have a $1,000 deposit and you don't have a financing clause in there. I'd be wondering, you don't need financing, yet you only have the $1,000 deposit. Why is there no financing in there? I'd be wondering as a seller, did you just eliminate the financing clause to sweeten the deal? Are you in competition and you need to sweeten the deal by removing a financing clause, yet you only have a $1,000 deposit? Or are you trying to get a lower price from me and so you've eliminated the financing clause to make me feel better about it? Because just because the financing clause doesn't exist doesn't mean that that buyer still doesn't have to go through being financially approved. Right. So then the same scenario happens. You have no financing clause, but you have $10,000 deposit. Well, now I'm feeling a lot more confident about you as a buyer. This deal is likely going to go through. So those are some things to think about. The highest purchase price is a big deal, but it's not always the best offer.
Yeah, I've never been a realtor, but I was in retail for a really long time. People can get funny about deposits, and I don't know if that transfers over to the real estate transaction. Being in the retail business and is, you know, selling big barbecues or ordering kitchens or, you know, big ticket items. It's sometimes hard to get people, and I don't know what it is, but sometimes people don't like to give deposits, or they like to only give the minimal deposit. I don't know if there's a lack of trust. I don't know if they've been burned in the past, or they read too much on the internet, or whatever the reason is. I think sometimes there's just that mental block. People just don't like giving out money and not receiving something in return. I don't know if that translates into the real estate world. But.
Well, the deposit's a serious thing, too. I mean, there's two ways you can get your deposit back, and that's both sides sign a mutual release saying both sides are released from this agreement of purchase and sale, at which time, once your money clears through the brokerage where it's sitting in trust, it's once it's cleared, then you get it back. Right. If both sides sign that mutual release.
Okay.
What if you get a situation, you have a seller, you make an attempt to buy their home, and it doesn't work out. It doesn't work out for contractual reasons. Seller's annoyed. They're really annoyed. And maybe they're even going to take their home off the market now because the whole experience has been negative. They haven't liked it. And what if they don't sign the mutual release? How does that buyer, say it's $10,000, how does that buyer get their $10,000 back if the seller didn't release them from that deal? The only other way is a court order.
Yeah.
And so now you're going to court. So maybe you could use, maybe you're not buying that house, but you want to buy something else. Well, yep. I've just got $10,000 of mine tied up.
And in a hot market like we've had this spring, that 2-day delay or 3-day delay may be all it takes to lose.
It could be months and months and months delay.
All right. This is Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 Truly Local Radio. Join Dale and me after this short break, and we'll continue to talk about some frequently asked real estate questions.
You've gone and done it again. You agree to plan your company's dinner party. Where will you hold it this year? Of course, there's nowhere better to hold large events than at the Legion Hall in Colburn. Hold your receptions and private parties at the Legion Hall, and you can get them catered. Call Shelley at 905-372-6554 and book the Legion for your event today. And call Sue at 905-342-2087 for catering.
The Royal Canadian Legion, Branch 133, is located at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
With Shaw Direct Satellite TV, you can count on hundreds of quality channels with receivers that let you watch what you want, when you want. Basic installation is free with all Shaw service, and until August 31st, if you buy two HD receivers, you get your money back in credit. It's like getting them for free. Find out more about Shaw Direct Satellite TV in Cobourg at United TV and Stereo, 243 Division Street, just north of King in Cobourg, or call 905-372-6831.
Can't find the vinyl you need? Be delighted with Zap Records downtown Cobourg. No album is too eclectic or eccentric, and if we don't have it, we'll find it. Put the needle on the record and drop on down to Zap Records, downtown Cobourg, or call 905-372-8231. Zap Records, your source for the largest collection of vinyl in Northumberland.
Are we wearing them?
Welcome back. This is Dale Bryant and Dave Smith on Reality Realty Northumberland, 89.7 FM's local real estate talk. We've been talking about frequently asked real estate questions and real estate misconceptions this morning. And Dave, I have a question for you now. What if we have a home buyer who finds a home that they want to put in an offer on, and their realtor suggests that they include a condition to have a home inspection? But the buyer states that the home inspection industry isn't regulated and there is little or no sense in spending the money on a home inspection since there is no accountability for the home inspector. What would you say to that?
Wow. Okay. I'm going to put my professional hat on here. But first of all, and again, this is just a statement that we've made up here, but first of all, the home inspection industry is not regulated, but it is certainly policed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number one, policed internally, externally, and I'll get into that in a bit of detail here. But when it comes to internal policing. Reputable brokers, offices, realtors themselves, they want to be associated with quality inspectors as a rule. And that, when I say as a rule, I mean in my experience, in a very, very high percentage, where you have to remember that the home inspector is representing the realtor's interest as well from a liability perspective. If the home inspector misses something, certainly if it's something that ends up in future costing a lot of money to repair, then the sales representative can of the home, the real estate professional, could be named as one of the parties responsible for that that problem or the lack of disclosure or finding of that problem. There is also a lot of peer pressure within the home inspector fraternity to do a good job, to do a proper job, to do a professional job. So the idea that the idea of the cowboy out there with a ladder and a truck represents the whole of home inspection is gratefully, and it preceded me, and I think it's preceded me by many years. Unfortunately, those sort of stigmas stay with any industry for a time, and I think that for the most part is the exception to the rule. Now, as a certified home inspector or a registered home inspector, I belong to four different associations, ASHI, NAHI, and CHAPI. The one that's most recognized is ASHI, which is the American version, which covers all of North America. And it's only by belonging to those associations that you can get on the websites, that you can get referred, that you can be recognized by insurers or by financiers to be considered a professional home inspector. And it's also the only way that you can get internal information. It's the only way you can get updates and just learning and take part in courses and get certifications, of which there are many. If your home inspector is not associated with one or all of those associations, my recommendation would be to keep looking for one. If your home inspector is not insured, keep looking for one. If you can't get or you don't know anything about it, if you're coming from out of town, ask for references, both from, really, in fairness, it has to really be from homeowners, but you might be able to get those references through a realtor who could put you in contact mm-hmm. with those homeowners, because you're not, how are you going to know who just bought a house or sold a house in the last 2 or 3 months? So the realtor may be able to help you that way, or if you know someone in the community, etc. I have to, as a Pillar to Post owner, franchisee, I have to carry $1.5 million in errors and omissions insurance. In other words, if I make an error in reporting something within a report, I am insured. If I make an omission, that is, I miss something, I am insured for that. And that also covers me, it covers the realtor, and it covers the brokerage that the realtor operates under. You have to remember this. In every graduating class of engineers, surgeons, and transmission specialists, there is one student that just passed. So you have to do your due diligence as a home buyer to make sure you get a home inspector that represents you the way you would want them to and has a reputation to hold up. And licensing in Canada for home inspectors is coming. It is on the horizon, and I would say it'll quite probably be it will be instituted within the next, probably by the end of the calendar year 2016.
Neat. Good answer, Dave.
Okay, so I have a question for you, Mr. Bryant.
Sure.
Right up your alley here.
Yeah.
The standard commission rate to pay a realtor to sell your home is 5%.
Ooh, no, absolutely not. There is no industry standard commission rate, period. Now, commission is absolutely something that can be negotiated between the client and the realtor. Saying that, each and every realtor, they could have their own commission rate standard, their personal standard that they say, you know what, I see what it costs me to do business and the way I think business should be done. So this is basically what I charge. So there could be standards like that, or some realtors even set it up having different level packages. They say, you know what, I got a a basic listing commission that I can offer you. And then maybe I do a basic listing plus some staging. And then I would offer at this rate. Or they might add things like an open house or a broker's open house. Or maybe they say you've got a property that that would benefit from bringing in someone with a drone and getting some good video aerial views of the property. So my commission rate, you know, now becomes this. So,
it's a return on investment thing in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, quite often you get what you pay for, but there is no industry standard. And there's a total commission that you'll agree to as a seller when you write up an agreement between yourself and the brokerage. There's a total commission rate. And a component of that commission rate will be offered to any cooperating brokerage that brings in a buyer. And if you think in Northumberland County, there's 140-some-odd realtors that belong to the board. So the odds, the mathematical odds of your realtor bringing the buyer is not as great as it possibly being from another cooperating brokerage. And then each realtor will receive a percentage, typically receive a percentage of the commission that goes to their broker. So commissions are negotiable. There is no industry standard.
Okay, when it comes to closing dates, there's so many when you think about it, all the people, all of the personalities, all the jobs and everything that is affected by the chain of events that is buying and selling a house, and you're just part of that very long chain as a buyer and a seller. If you don't like the stress and speed of having the same closing date of a home that I'm moving from and then matching it up with the home I'm moving to, maybe I'd like to do some painting and make some changes from a new home. And as we discussed earlier, we've had some great experiences with having an overlap in that closing date. I understand you can get bridge financing from a lender to basically what you're going to do is carry two houses for that month period, the end month mm-hmm. and then the beginning month. How much will that cost me on how much would it cost me to carry both houses for a month?
Okay. And that price will vary from lender to lender. They all have their own programs for that. And people tend to bridge from maybe just a few days to several weeks, depending on what they're trying to accomplish in that time. Two of the lenders that I looked at just prior to the show, one of the lenders, there's an administration fee usually. One of the lenders had a $100 administration fee for bridge financing. The other had a $250 administration fee. And then typically, you're looking at rates that with these two lenders, one was at 4% and one was at 4% above prime, and one was at 5% above prime. So if you look at percentage-wise, it's a higher percent. But if you look at total dollars spent over those few days or few weeks, I think most people would say it was well worth the money they spent on that. And if that amount, the amount to be bridged is large enough or requires a long period of time to be bridged, there could be some additional lawyer funds because it might have to be registered, that bridged amount, on both homes. But dollar value, I personally think money well spent.
Well, and we have had this. One of the best moves we've ever had was we purchased a home, and this home, we had big plans for it. The carpet, the flooring needed to be replaced. The kitchen needed to be reset up. We were adding a huge island and redoing the kitchen cabinets. We were painting the house from top to bottom, and we carried both those houses for a month. But I got to tell you, doing that work, getting that house painted, I mean, we went in, you could leave your tools there. You could even leave the clothes you were painting in there, change out of them, come the next day, just pick up the paint roller and carry on. We painted that house. It was a 2,800 square foot house. We replaced the floors in half of that house, including the stairways, painted every single surface of that house, including most of the ceilings. And the time that was spent was less than half of that. So I think the $1,000 it cost us to carry that house for the 3 weeks or 26 days or something that it was just the best. So I would recommend it to anyone who has big plans, or even just painting and flooring a house, much easier, much better to do than in that first 2 or 3 days that you're in that house.
Absolutely.
Well, Dale, another hour. gone, flown by. Thank you to the listeners of Northumberland 89.7 and Reality Realty specifically for spending part of your morning with us. If you have any questions or comments or topic suggestions pertaining to real estate, how come it doesn't say real estate or home inspection? But I think we have to talk to our editor.
You almost went a whole show, Dave.
Pertaining to real estate / home inspection, feel free to contact Dave by emailing dave@realityrealty.ca, or you can contact Dale by emailing dale@dalebryant.ca, or call the radio station at 905-372-2391.
And don't forget to join me, Dale Bryant, real estate broker with Royal LePage, Pro Alliance Realty Brokerage, and Dave Smith, certified home inspector with Pillar to Post Home Inspectors, next Thursday morning from 11 a.m. until 12 noon for Reality Realty on Northumberland, 89.7 FM, truly local radio. Until next week, folks.